Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the President's speech today at the UN, where he urged world leaders to speak out forcibly against violence and extremism, pointedly saying in reference to the killing of the American diplomats because of an obscure, bigoted film, that there is no speech that justifies mindless violence. Juan Cole, a professor of modern Middle Eastern history at the University of Michigan, joins us to discuss today's activity at the UN and his latest article at Truthdig, Muslims Are No Different, or Why Bill Maher's Blood Libel is Bigotry. Then we will speak with Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter David K. Johnston about his new book, The Fine Print, How Big Companies Use Plain English to Rob You Blind. And since David has been called the de facto chief tax enforcement officer of the United States, we'll also discuss Mitt Romney's latest tax return and the ones he has refused to release, in particular 2009. Then finally, with Obama telling the UN that the US would do what we must to stop Iran getting nuclear weapons, and Ahmadinejad calling Israel a fake regime that would be eliminated, we will examine the gradual elimination of policy options to avoid war between the United States and Iran. Dr. Trita Parsi, the president of the National Iranian American Council, joins us to discuss the three ways a war could begin. He has an article at opendemocracy.net, The U.S. and Iran on a Dead-End Path to War. And joining us now is Juan Cole, a professor of modern Middle Eastern and South Asian history at the University of Michigan and president of the Global Americana Institute. He's the author of Sacred Space and Holy War, The Ayatollahs and Democracy in Iraq, Napoleon's Egypt Invading the Middle East and Engaging the Muslim World. He's also the author of the blog Informed Comment at juancole.com and has an article at Truthdig, Muslims Are No Different, or Why Bill Maher's Blood Libel is Bigotry. Welcome to Background Briefing, Juan Cole.
Thanks so much.
And the president was speaking today before the United Nations. He sort of used the speech in effect, bookending it by talking about the U.S. diplomat that was killed in Libya, Christopher Stevens, and saying that our future will be determined by people like Christopher Stevens and not by his killers. What was your sense of whether it was resonating with the audience there? There seemed to be some confusion amongst the audience as to why the U.S. Has this First Amendment that allows the kind of incitement that we've seen that's resulted from this obscure film.
Right. Well, of course, it is true that in many parts of the world, the United States First Amendment is unthinkable, and governments do control what can be seen in public spaces, on TV, on the Internet. And so in societies like that, the assumption is that the U.S. government could do something about a blasphemous and distasteful film if it wanted to. On the other hand, I think a lot of people in the Arab world are pretty sophisticated and recognize that the U.S. Can't do anything about it. And it should be remembered that despite very severe censorship regimes throughout the Arab world, hackers and activists found ways to get the word out about demonstrations and to ridicule leaders like Hosni Mubarak and Zinedine Ben Ali in Tunisia. So I think a lot of people know what the score is.
So is there a kind of sick kind of symmetry here between the handful of bigots like Robert Spencer, David Horowitz, Pamela Geller, and these people behind this film? That once, you know, Geller's got these posters up now in the MTA in New York and apparently in San Francisco, these bigoted posters, their influence is obviously disproportionate to the mayhem that they provoke. But my understanding is, for example, in Pakistan, that the majority of the people there are kind of appalled at the idea that about, you know, 10% of the country are sort of, you know, fundamentalists who take to the streets on any opportunity and shut down the entire country. So I'm wondering here whether there is a possibility of a kind of backlash in the way that there was a backlash in Libya against those that killed the ambassador when they went after the militia, the citizens of Benghazi.
Oh, well, it's a canny point. And in fact, I'd go even further, Ian. The Cairo embassy protest was a couple thousand people in a city of 20 million. And in Cairo, if you call a demonstration and only a couple thousand people show up, I mean, that's considered a huge failure. In Pakistan, the only crowds that really took up this point were relatively small, and they belonged to the fundamentalist Jamaat-e-Islami, the Muslim fundamentalist party, which, when it runs for office, because it's a party, it typically gets 3 to 5% of the vote. And so, you know, in a place like Pakistan, it's not even necessary for the people to drive these guys out because they're not in power in the first place. They're not that influential. And most people don't particularly like Taliban types. In Pakistani Islam has a lot of singing in it and some dancing sometimes, and shrines of Sufis, all of those things that the hardline fundamentalists hate are typical of Pakistani Islam. So there's no love lost among most Pakistanis for these kinds of fundamentalists. And it's one of the things I live with the cross of trying to explain to Americans that Pakistanis aren't actually fundamentalists for the most part.
Well, that's not to say that there's not a lot of Sunni and Shia violence within the country. And also, it's a bit puzzling to understand the motives of the Pakistani military in wanting the, apparently wanting the Taliban to be installed in Afghanistan, where the U.S. will eventually leave, and most people predict a civil war. But if the Taliban were to become the next regime in Afghanistan, wouldn't that have the effect of encouraging the Pakistani version of the Taliban?
Or making people in Pakistan even more afraid of them.
Right. That's the other way to look at it, yeah. So what's your sense then of why it is that we have these ideas that a handful of these religious fanatics are so influential and so powerful, and we've basically been swept up in this ridiculous overreaction to this ridiculously obscure film? That's basically the point you're making, is that there's no context to this discussion that's taking place.
Absolutely. Well, you know, when we analyze American politics and we think, well, why did, you know, Mitt Romney or Barack Obama say something, we tend to think, well, he's playing to his base, or he's trying to expand, you know, his appeal beyond his base, or there's some reason for which they have taken a position. And when we come to discuss someone like Mohamed Morsi, the president of Egypt, and why he was slow to condemn the embassy demonstrations in Cairo, where the American flag was taken down and burned, you know, it's never the case that we stop and think, well, why exactly was he slow? And it seems obvious to me that he is from the Muslim Brotherhood, from a fundamentalist party. He's in danger of being outflanked by people to his right, sort of the Egyptian equivalent of the Tea Party. And so he has to be careful, you know, both to keep correct relations with the U.S., but also to not to offend his base. And his base are very upset about this film. But it should be said about the so-called film is it doesn't seem to be much of a film. It was made under false pretenses, dubbed with the name of the Prophet Muhammad after the actors had all been done with it. And it hasn't really been, you know, it's been shown once in one Dowdy theater in L.A. And then the trailer for it made no splash until it was translated into Arabic. And the people behind this film clearly reached out to the Salafis and the most easily offended groups in Egypt in hopes of provoking them. So this was a plot. I mean, the people who made this film are connected to Pamela Geller, and we don't have any proof of this, but it needs looking into as to whether there wasn't a deliberate attempt by the network. We know there's a network of Islamophobes, of people who hate Muslims in the United States, kind of a latter-day Ku Klux Klan that gets $40 million a year from foundations like the Mellons Gay Foundation and others to promote hatred of Islam. Whether this network was behind this film and was deliberately hoping for violence on the eve of the presidential election in the United States, maybe hoping for embassy officials to be taken hostage, as happened to Jimmy Carter in Iran. And I think it may be much more sinister than simply somebody making a film that was found offensive. I think it may have been a deliberate attempt to get the Muslims goat over in the Middle East in a way that might play into the hands of the American right.
Well, you know, the people around Juan Cole, the people around Romney are completely cynical, and Romney himself is just a serial liar. Now, Mukasey, the former Attorney General, apparently he's floating this idea that he's put out now that Obama is planning on releasing the blind Sheikh Rahman, who's responsible for the first World Trade Center bombing. So there, I think that your point's well taken. There's a machinery out there that's trying to create trouble, aren't they?
Yes, I think so. And they didn't actually get as much trouble as they were hoping for, nor the kind of trouble they were hoping for the most part. And even in Libya, where things went very bad, and we did have four embassy personnel killed, including the ambassador, the people of Benghazi were so upset that this small group of a few dozen fanatics took this step against the U.S. consulate that they then attacked the headquarters of the militias in Benghazi and drove them out of the city. So, you know, that's a headline that I think since 9/11, Americans have been waiting for to see that, you know, angry Muslim crowds attack al-Qaeda and drive them out.
Right. Again, I'm speaking with Juan Cole, Professor of Modern Middle Eastern and South Asian History at the University of Michigan. His latest book is Engaging the Muslim World, and he's the author of the blog Informed Comment at juancole.com, and he also has an article at Truthdig, Muslims Are No Different, or Why Bill Maher's Blood Libel is Bigotry. Let's talk a bit about your article at Truthdig. What is this about Bill Maher and his bigotry? I missed what he said, but yeah. You've pretty much said you've obviously been watching him for some time and think that he is an anti-Muslim. He's anti-Muslim and he's soft on the hardline Israelis. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, Bill Maher is an irreverent guy, and he's a comic, and we all kind of love Bill Maher. But there's something a little bit sinister about some of his blind spots, and one of them is that he just his body language, his comments show that although he hates religion in general, and one understands that, and I respect it. But he really, really despises Islam and I think Muslims. So, you know, he had Keith Ellison on, one of two Muslims, Muslim Americans in Congress, and he was just personally very, very distasteful towards him. And he has people, you know, from the Israeli right wing on, from the Likud party, also, who are in coalition with the Haredim and the most religious factions in Israel, and which sometimes try to make laws that affect secular people, and despite them being part of the Israeli right, he fawns on them, and his body language is very different. But the thing that really set me off was on Friday, Bill Maher said that half of Muslims approve of killing someone who criticized the Prophet Muhammad. And you know, he's accusing people, half of Muslims, of having homicidal tendencies. And this is a blood libel. You know, the thing I object to most in it is this kind of sentiment that Muslims are, you know, one step away from being murderers, that they're different from other people, and is that it's exactly the same kind of libel that was launched for centuries by Western Christians against Jews. Jews were accused of stealing Christian children and killing them and using their blood in rituals. This is a blood libel. And it sounds, you know, bizarre and ridiculous, but, you know, Jews all through the medieval period and into the modern one, you know, were victims of riots and pogroms by angry Christian mobs who were convinced that some child had disappeared and that it was the Jews who did it. So, you know, Jews were configured by Europeans as murderers, as child murderers, and it is a horrible libel and completely untrue. But lots of people died over it, and you know, the hatred for Jews that it cultivated is, in some ways, you know, feeds into the Holocaust. So, for Marr to say that Muslims want to kill people, half of all Muslims want to kill people over a slight to their religion, is a very similar kind of thing. I mean, I don't know of any Muslim who has killed anybody in the United States because the Prophet Muhammad was criticized. I mean, it's just completely untrue that people are acting in this way.
Well, I, as you point out in your article at Truthdig, Juan Cole, that no religion has a monopoly on religious violence. India, dozens of Christians have been killed by Hindu fundamentalists. In Myanmar, angry Buddhists have attacked the hapless Muslim minority. In Sri Lanka, Buddhists have attacked the Tamils, Christians. And perhaps what is going on here in the context of President Obama's speech at the UN calling on global leaders to speak out forcibly against violence and extremism is not so much that a movie has caused a lot of the world, the Islamic and Muslim world, to hate the United States as much as they do, and that's probably exaggerated. But still, look what we've done. You know, we attacked a country on the basis of weapons of mass destruction that they didn't have. We connected it to 9/11, which was a complete lie. And we basically occupied and devastated the country for 8.5 years, resulting in the deaths of perhaps hundreds of thousands and the woundings of millions and the displacement of millions. So perhaps those are the reasons why people are angry at us.
Yeah, well, you know, there is anger over those things. And you know, it's very clever of the West to organize its killings and hate campaigns under the cloak of an organized state with an army. But you know, the final results are even more devastating than a few crowd riots. But you know, I don't have a problem with someone saying that religious people are too touchy, that religion often is used and manipulated as ways of flipping crowds into violence, and that the Salafi Muslims who attacked U.S. embassies in Cairo and Tunisia and the consulate in Libya were wrong and despicable and fanatics. I mean, I don't have a problem with any of that. But saying that the Muslims are peculiar, that they're more violent and homicidal than anybody else in the world, that's the definition of bigotry. I mean, you're singling out one group and stereotyping it. It may be that things set off Muslims that don't set off other groups, but all groups are prone to crowd violence. And, you know, the Haredim in Israel have rioted and burned buildings over issues of things like control of religious shrines. So I insist that all human beings are equidistant from good and bad, and that no group has a monopoly on that, and we're all equally bad in that way. We all can be set off in very irrational and negative ways, so I object to this singling out of Muslims, and especially, you know, in the United States, where there are these campaigns to stop Muslims from building mosques, from having community centers.
And laws have been passed to prevent a mythical takeover of our law by Sharia law. I agree. We've run out of time here, Juan, but I thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Again, I've been speaking with Juan Cole, Professor of Modern Middle Eastern and South Asian History at the University of Michigan and President of the Global Americana Initiative. He was the author of Sacred Space and Holy War, The Ayatollahs and Democracy in Iraq, Napoleon's Egypt, Invading the Middle East, and Engaging the Muslim World. He's also the author of the blog Inform Comment at juancole.com and has an article at Truthdig, Muslims Are No Different, or Why Bill Maher's Blood Libel is Bigotry. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking with David K. Johnston about his new book, The Fine Print, How Big Companies Use Plain English to Rob You Blind.
Messages, victims, and Christians both drinking blood, and they'll pray for the destruction of all hatred, more often just those with hate for us. Cause it hurts when you discover one's worse and one's better to suffer or cause others to. You can live by your conscience. Now guilt is a concept.